Good morning, and welcome. Welcome to the Q2 15/16 results. Today, we're going to go through the highlights of the year, and then I'm going to hand over to Tony to go through the specifics and the P&L. But in terms of the overview, first of all, we've had a good quarter, good set of financial results. Headline revenues up 2% year-on-year, strong performance on cash flow as well. Fiber continues to be a real driver of our success. There's been strong take-up across the market. We've now got over 5 million homes and businesses connected to the network. We passed 24 million premises across the U.K. And importantly, it's being taken up across the whole of the market. So over half of the adds within the quarter are other service providers apart from our own. It's not just about the network itself, it's about the services and content that's covered. That we carry over the network. And one of the highlights in the quarter was the launch of BT Sport Europe, which is doing well. It's ahead of our expectations at this stage. And the majority of our customers are taking the full complement of the sport channels on the back of it. So that's going well for us. Audience figures are good as well, and we'll go into that in more detail later. So net-net, we're on track to deliver the outlook that we've talked about for the full year, and we'll give you more detail on that in Tony's presentation. Quick update on the CMA process and the acquisition of EE. You'll have seen yesterday that the CMA gave us provisional approval for the acquisition of EE without remedies, and this is because they don't expect a significant reduction in competition. Obviously, we're very pleased about this. We think it's the right decision, and it will allow us, we think, to create a network that will be good not just for BT, but for the whole of the UK. In terms of the timeline at this point, there's a further consultation. They'll be taking views from everybody across the market, including us, until the 19th of November. They've taken advantage of the potential to take a full 8 weeks to review those. It might not take all that time, but they've chosen to at least flag that they may do. And if that's the case, the final decision will be just after Christmas on the 18th of January. That means we're on track to complete the deal by the end of March. Okay, on that note, Tony.
Thanks, Gavin. Good morning, everyone. As Gavin said, this has been a good set of results, which reinforce our confidence in our expectations for the full year. Our revenue performance was strong, and we've continued to transform our cost base while investing in the growth of the business. I'd like to start by looking at an overview of the quarter two financials. Headline revenue was flat, but this reflects a £53 million negative impact from foreign exchange movements and a £33 million reduction in transit revenues. Our main revenue measure, which excludes FX and transit, was up 2%. It's a significant improvement on last quarter's performance and the best result for 7 quarters. Consumer delivered another good revenue performance, driven by the launch of our Champions League coverage. Openreach also had a good quarter, helped by fiber broadband. With steady performances from BT Business and Wholesale, but Global Services was again impacted by a tough UK environment, which, although better than last quarter, offset strong growth in our European businesses. EBITDA was down 1%. This is mainly in BT Consumer, reflecting the costs relating to the launch of BT Sport Europe. EBITDA was also down in Global Services, reflecting the public sector declines in the UK. Our other divisions grew their EBITDA, helped by cost transformation and fiber growth within Openreach. Below EBITDA, we continue to see the benefits of our focus on debt reduction, leading to lower interest charges. However, this was partially offset by the fact that our share count is 4% higher, reflecting employee share schemes and the equity placing in February. This meant that our earnings per share were level with last year. Normalized free cash flow was slightly above last year. However, this is despite a cash payment of around £90 million to UEFA rights, and reflects some tight working capital management. So good performance here. And finally, our net debt was down $1.1 billion year on year, reflecting both the equity placing and the cash flow generated by the business. Net debt is up $100 million from June, with the payment of last year's final dividend offsetting cash generated in the business. So overall, our quarter two performance puts us on track to meet our full year outlook. Moving on now to operating costs. The chart shows that underlying operating costs, excluding transit, were up 3%. However, as you may remember at our quarter four results in May, we called out a number of headwinds that we faced this year. Firstly, all lever costs are now above the line. These were £20 million in quarter two. Secondly, we no longer benefit from the sale of redundant copper, which we net against our costs. And we flagged that our pension operating charge, which is a non-cash item, would increase. This had an £8 million impact in the quarter. In addition, we had the cost of our new BT Sport Europe channel. It's worth clarifying that we expense the UEFA rights evenly throughout the year, and we've incurred 2 months of rights costs this quarter. But the cash payments to UEFA are lump sums paid twice a year. Hence, the cash payment of £90 million is larger than the circa £50 million of P&L costs of the rights. Excluding these factors, underlying costs, excluding transit, were down 1%. This is a small reduction than in recent quarters, as it reflects the high cost of sales associated with our materially improved revenue performance. These have partly offset a strong performance on net labour costs. And excluding the headwinds I mentioned, these were down 4% for the quarter and 5% for the half year. So we've had another good performance in labour costs. And I'd like to give you the big picture on how these have evolved over the last 6 years. Historically, BT outsourced and offshored a number of activities, including some aspects of frontline customer services. Strategically, we now want the key roles to be undertaken by BT staff, with the key customer services activities being undertaken in the UK and back office activities centralised in both the UK and overseas. This strategy has allowed us to improve our customer services and reduce our unit costs. We've insourced 13,000 roles into the UK in the last 6 years, including around 2,000 roles last year. The insourced roles cover a number of areas, including customer service, outbound sales, facilities, and engineering activities. The insourced roles remove the suppliers' overheads and margins, reduce staff churn, and improve the quality of the staff output. We've created a central services organisation with around 6,000 roles, providing more efficient and effective back office activities. We've invested in over 1,000 new customer service roles, which will support our commitment to have over 80% of BT consumer calls answered by the people in the UK by the end of 2016. And we plan to go further in years to come. We've invested in our engineering staff to support both our fibre rollout and to improve service through quicker repairs and provisions. We've recruited around 3,000 open reach engineers in the past 18 months, of which more than 300 were apprentices. In total, we hired more than 800 graduates and apprentices across BT last year, and we plan to hire around about 900 more this year. As we've insourced more of our engineering work back into BT, we've seen an increase in our capitalised labour. So we've seen a change in the mix between our various labour cost categories. But the key point is that we've been able to continue to reduce our net labour costs, as you can see on that right-hand chart. We're confident we can continue to do this in the future, and in conjunction with our cost transformation activities, we still see more than £1 billion of gross cost-saving opportunities. These savings allow us to invest in the business. And I'd like to now like to touch on the investments that we're actually making in our network. This quarter, our CapEx was £629 million, 18% higher than last year. This was driven by an increase in fibre rollout, around £20 million because of higher volumes of Ethernet provision, and a further £20 million from connecting more new homes to our network. You may also remember our quarter three results in January, we explained our future network vision. At the heart of it is a single IP core network, providing one common access platform to connect copper, fiber, and mobile. We've been investing in this, and we're on track to complete the refresh of our UK IP core. On our fiber broadband rollout, we have now £157 million of grant funding deferred. Based on our latest assumption of about 30% take-up in the BDUK areas. This reflects the strong demand that we're seeing. We expect the vast majority of this deferred power funding to be reinvested to improve both the quality and the reach of the fibre network. Looking at group CapEx for the first half of the year, it's up 23%, as illustrated by the chart on the right-hand side. Most of this reflects the deferral grant funding. Excluding this, our CapEx is up about 10%. But this largely reflects the phasing last year. Normally our CapEx is fairly evenly weighted between H1 and H2, but last year it was more H2 weighted. This year we expect our group CapEx for the full year to be broadly in line with the first half run rate after allowing for the grant funding. Looking specifically at Openreach, we do expect the CapEx of 15-16 as a whole to be higher than last year, given the investment we're making in our network and service. Moving on to a different topic now, and we'll touch very briefly on the pension. The IAS 19 deficit has slightly reduced from last quarter to £5.6 billion net of tax. As you can see in the chart, this reflects a reduction in the liabilities due to lower future inflation expectations, largely offset by a decline in asset values due to market conditions. Moving on to shareholder returns, I'm pleased to announce an interim dividend of 4.4p, up 13%, growing the middle of our full-year outlook range of a 10 to 15% increase. In addition, this quarter, we spent a further £61 million on our share buyback program, bringing us to £250 million so far this year. We still expect to spend around £300 million for the year, but we front-loaded it again this year as we had some employee share schemes vesting in August. Overall, our shareholder returns remain well covered by our cash flow, and we remain committed to paying progressive dividends. Once we've acquired EE, we'll talk more about our shareholder returns then. Lastly, I'd like to remind you of our outlook. This is on a standalone BT basis. On underlying revenue, excluding transit, this quarter's 2% growth is a significant improvement on the flat performance last quarter. It puts us in a good position to meet our guidance of growth for the full year. In the second half of the year, we'll see further benefit from our Champions League coverage. But bear in mind, we have a tough comparison quarter four from the ladder pricing revenue wholesale received last year. We continue to expect modest growth in EBITDA for the year, and we expect normalised free cash flow to be around £2.8 billion. And on that note, I'll hand back to Gavin.
Thank you, Tony. So I'm going to take you through each of the lines of business, starting with global services. So in global services, it was a better performance this quarter. Underlying revenue was down 2%, and that was an improvement on previous quarters. In terms of the component parts, a strong performance in continental Europe, up 12%, driven by the delivery of a number of major contracts. We also did very well in Asia Pacific, but that was not enough to offset a poorer performance in the US and Latin America. Closer to home in the UK, revenues were down 8%, which was better than the 12% decline that we saw in Q1, but it's clearly not exactly where we want it to be yet. In terms of what was driving that, fundamentally it was about the unwinding of the local government contracts that we've talked about in previous quarters. So we will see that continue going forward for the next couple of quarters. Underlying operating costs, excluding transit, were down 2%, which left EBITDA on an underlying basis, excluding FX, down 3%. And you can see within that EBITDA number that the move from build to maintenance phase, particularly in the health program, which we talked about in Q4. We've also got lever costs above the line, as Tony mentioned. And we see that continuing in the second half of the year, But in spite of that, we see EBITDA growing in global services in the second half. In terms of cash flow, it was up almost 80 million year on year, so better performance there, predominantly down to working capital. We also launched a number of new products in the quarter, particularly around our cloud of clouds strategy. One particular one was BT One Cloud Voice, which is a way of connecting to video conferencing. You have to schedule the video conference call and connect to it regardless of which system you come from, be that Cisco, BT's own system, or indeed something like Microsoft's Link. So it's another example of being able to use the network, and particularly in the cloud-to-cloud strategy, to drive competitive advantage. In terms of the order intake, up 36% within the quarter, strong performance across the year as a whole, all in all, an improving picture, but we feel as though there's still some way to go in global services. Moving on to BT Business. And again, a steady performance in BT Business within the quarter. The underlying revenues, excluding transit, were flat, which is an improvement on recent quarters, and you can see the trend improving over a number of quarters here on the slide. In terms of what's behind that, BT Ireland had a very good quarter, and data and networking was also up. Voice was down 1%, but that's an improvement on recent quarters. IT services down 4%. That was because, and we talked about this in previous presentations, that we're focused on services in IT services rather than hardware per se. It's worth talking about what's happening in IP lines. So we launched around a year ago a new set of IP voice products, and they're really beginning to get some traction in the market. So the number of IP lines grew 50%, just under 50% in the quarter, delivered by our BT Cloud Voice service and our BT Cloud Phone service, both of which were up significantly. What we see is this is the trend that we think will begin to accelerate going forward. Yeah. Underlying lines are going down as customers are increasingly moving to IP-based delivery mechanisms, replacing some of the lines with IP lines, but IP generally has fewer lines but higher ARPU. So if you look in the quarter, just this specific quarter, around a quarter of the lines loss, the PSTN lines loss, were replaced with IP lines. And we see that trend continuing, and if anything, the mix improving going forward. But that is the key dynamic in the business market at the moment. In terms of costs, they were down 1%, which left EBITDA up marginally at 1% within the quarter. In terms of cash flow, that was down. That was largely down to a change in working capital that worked against us, a timing change. In terms of orders, decent performance in the quarter, up 16% on a 12-month trading basis, up 1%. So continuing to see good, steady performance in BT Business. Which takes me on to BT Consumer. And Consumer had another strong quarter, really defined by the launch of BT Sport Europe. At a revenue line, on a revenue basis, revenue was up 7%, driven by particularly strong performance on broadband and TV, up 17% within the quarter. ARPU was up a very reasonable 6% to over £427. Now that is a good performance, and one that compares very favorably with many of our peers. In terms of EBITDA, that was down 10% in the quarter, and that reflects the investments we've been making on BT Sport Europe and AMC, offset, not completely offset, by continuing progress on cost transformation. In terms of cash flow, that was down 53 million within the quarter. Down 50%. It was 53 million in the quarter, and that reflects the payments we've been making to UEFA around Champions League, and that's what Tony referred to in his presentation. Operationally, a very robust set of numbers from consumer as well, starting with BT Mobile. We've now got over 200,000 customers on BT Mobile, taking increasingly the mid and top tier packs. The mix is improving there. Great performance on line loss, second best performance in the last 5 years. Line loss was only 52,000 within the quarter. On broadband, 82,000 net adds within the quarter. That's just over half, over 50% market share, 51% market share within the quarter specifically. Another very strong number on fibre, and increasingly taking the top tier fibre products as well. So 210,000 fibre net adds within our retail business. And just to give you some sense of the scale of it now, 44% of our overall broadband customer base is now on fibre. And if there's one number that isn't covered in that, it's TV, so we should talk about that in a little bit more detail. Best ever quarter in terms of TV net adds. So we had 106,000 TV net adds within the quarter, which is really a very good number indeed. We've continued to invest in the offering, both on the TV side and the sports side. So on the TV side, we added AMC this quarter, and a third of the available audience have already already watched that channel, and we see that increasing going forward. We added the full suite of UK TV channels. We now have 182 channels across the services in totality. In terms of sport, sport audience continued to grow, up 47% year on year. Premier League audience grew year on year, but also other sports such as MotoGP are doing very well for us, where the audience is up 56% versus last year. We're delighted we won the rights for the Australian home cricket between 2016 and 2021, which of course includes the next Ashes series. But the highlight of the quarter was probably the launch of BT Sport Europe on the 1st of August. And this has made a very good start for us. As we said, it's ahead of expectations in terms of what it's delivering financially for us, and the majority of our consumer and commercial customers are taking the full suite of channels. Indeed, 75% of people are now paying in some way or other for BT Sport, and that compares with around 40% before the launch of BT Sport Europe. I'm also really pleased with the way we've used the technology to take full advantage of this content. And a couple of things in particular are worth highlighting. We launched the first Ultra HD sports channel in Europe in the quarter, BT Sport Ultra HD, which is absolutely spectacular if you get a chance to see that. But also we relaunched the BT Sport app, and we've seen unique users go up 30% year on year behind that. And this is, I think, a brilliant way that takes advantage of the fact that you're showing 8 games simultaneously, and how can you make that something that's a real interactive experience for your customers. And I think we've done a tremendous job of this, and rather than talk about it, I'll show you.
This season, BT Sport brings you a whole new Champions League experience. Choose any live match and take control of your show and capture the biggest moments of the game so far with our interactive timeline. Multicam lets you watch the highlights from different camera angles, and the goal alerts are just one click away from the action as it happens. With all these features available on the BT Sport app and at btsport.com, you won't miss a thing. BT Sport and the UEFA Champions League, it's in your hands.
So, good performance on sport, but also now a good performance on BT Wholesale. So, underlying revenue on wholesale was up 3% year on year, which is a decent number. It's again driven by IP. So, IP services are up 22% year on year, both in terms of the underlying IP minutes, as well as the underlying Ethernet side of the business as well. So, on the volume side of things, Ethernet orders had the second highest quarter, which is a great result, and exchange minutes were up 23% on the IPX side of things. Costs, excluding transit, were up 4%, and that reflects the investments we've been making in IP services, and that was partly offset by a reduction in SG&A of 15% within the quarter. Net-net, EBITDA up 2% year-on-year. In terms of cash flow, that was up year on year modestly, only 3 million, but it's an improving picture. And order intake was very strong again, and you can see the rolling 12-month average on the chart here, but it was up 40% year on year within the quarter, and up almost the same as much again on a 12-month basis. There's one other thing I did want to highlight around BT Wholesale is its performance on fibre. So increasingly we're seeing the smaller CPs, who tend to be customers of BT Wholesale, really get behind fibre and really benefit from it. And you can see that in the take-up of FTTC within the quarter itself. And I think this again demonstrates that this is an investment that works across the whole of the market, whether you're a big customer or a small customer of BT. So talking about fibre, fibre was also the driver of a good quarter in Openreach. Revenue up 2%, driven by 38% increase in fibre broadband revenues, partly offset by the drag from regulation of almost, well, in fact, around 30 million in terms of that impact. Costs were flat within the quarter, which means EBITDA was up 3%. Tony referred to capital in Openreach in his presentation, but just to reiterate it, it's up 41% in terms of capex within the quarter, driven behind the investments on fibre broadband, new homes and new sites that we've been connecting, and also the throughput on Ethernet. In terms of operating cash flow, that was $329 million, where the increase in capital was not completely offset by changes in working capital. In terms of the operating metrics themselves, the physical line base grew again, up 7,000 within the quarter itself, which means over the last 12 months, it's up over 188,000. On fibre itself, as we said, we've passed the magical 5 million mark in terms of homes and premises connected. In terms of the coverages as a whole, we give coverage to 24 million homes and properties across the UK as a whole. So 5 million connected, the take-up of around 21%. And increasingly, it's been taken up across the market as a whole. So 50% of the ads within the quarter were other CPs, in other words, not our own BT-owned service providers. So fibre continues to be the key driver of our business. So before closing, I want to just touch on the DCR and the Ofcom strategic review. We talked about this in September. I know many of you came to the announcement we made around Digital Britain on the 22nd of September, but I just thought it was worth just reiterating a couple of points today. We put in our submission with everybody else at the beginning of October, and the things that we're really trying to call out in this submission for Ofcom to consider really come down to three things. First of all is certainty. It is the ability to get some clarity and certainty over the sort of investment period that is typical in this market, which runs through many, many years, rather than something that is continually being changed. So looking to align the timescale of that investment period is really, really important. Secondly, it's around clarity. Simplify the framework as much as possible, remove duplication in regulation, and really ensure that the regulation can't be gained by any individual player trying to take advantage of differences in regulation between different providers. And then fairness is the third area. Fairness in terms of getting a fair return for the investment anybody is making, not just BT, but any provider in the market, making sure they're able to make a fair return for the investments they're making. But also fairness in terms of how regulation is applied across the market as a whole, and that it should recognise that it is a single homogeneous market now. And the regulation that is used to control, if you like, any of the players in the market should not be defined on where they come from, but recognise the fact that customers are increasingly buying bundled services. And one area we think they should look at in particular, you won't be surprised to hear, is pay TV. At the top of the chart, you can see how much regulation and indeed how dynamic the market is in terms of broadband. We've got the lowest prices at the Big Five in Europe. Clearly, the pay TV market has not benefited from the same sort of competition where we've got the highest prices. And that is one of the areas we think we should look at in more detail. And with the right regulatory framework, on the 22nd of September, we set out what we felt we could do, not just for BT, but more importantly, what we could do for the country as a whole. And it was around these four pledges. Number one, we stand ready to deliver a minimum broadband speed of between 5 and 10 megabits per second, depending on where they land, of course. provided that Ofcom and the government create the right regulatory framework to make this commercially viable. Secondly, we're ready to expand the reach of our fibre network to help go beyond the government's target of 95% coverage across the whole of the UK. Thirdly, we're ready to take the UK from a super-fast nation to an ultra-fast nation behind our investments in GFAST and increased investments on FTTP. So we set out a goal that we would achieve 10 million homes achieving 300 to 500 megabits per second between now and 2020. And indeed, we've actually been testing the next generation of technology, which is XGFAST, in our labs over the last few weeks. And we announced at the Broadband Forum that we're achieving speeds of 5.6 gigabits per second on that. So it demonstrates how much you can do with the existing combination of copper and fiber, rather than just assuming everything needs to be fiber to the front. And finally, raising the bar on service. Now, we need to recognize, not just as BT, but as an industry as a whole, that customers' expectations are increasing and in many ways going ahead of what any of us are able to deliver at the moment. So we all need to step up on service. We've talked about some of the things we're doing today. Indeed, on that day, Joe set out the Openreach Charter, which makes a number of commitments around going beyond the current Ofcom agreed service levels and exceeding them. But it's not just what goes on in Openreach, of course. I think it's also true that all the service providers need to step up. We've launched a number of things over the last quarter I think that will help. The My Engineer service within Openreach, which allows you to track where their engineer is when they come to your house or your business. And that's reduced in one CP in the pilot scheme. It reduced misappointments by 25%. In the consumer market, we've talked about handling calls in the UK in Tony's presentation, but we also launched a new app called MyBT, which gives customers much more control and flexibility around how they manage their own services, and indeed they can change their appointments right on their smartphone. So I think there's a couple of examples of what we're doing on service. So, in summing up, this was a good financial performance within the quarter. You saw a better revenue trend across the business. And with our ongoing focus around costs, this has largely allowed us to control and swallow the investments we've been making on Champions League within the quarter. The operational trends are showing the strategy is working. We've seen growth in TV, good performance on broadband. BT Sport is delivering what we expected it to. Mobile has started very strongly, but we're also seeing the benefits of IP services that we launched within the business market really having an effect on our business, helping us drive orders going forward. As I've made the point, on many occasions, service is a key priority for us, and this is a multi-year program, but we are making progress and we'll continue to invest in that. And fiber continues to go from strength to strength, not just for our own business, but increasingly across the market as a whole. We've set out a vision to Ofcom and indeed the market as a whole that we are prepared to continue to invest going forward and take us to the next generation of technology, not just for the benefit of BT, but of course for the nation as a whole. And it will, if we're allowed to do that, create a great platform for growth. Thank you very much. Right, we'll move to Q&A. Hands up already. I, of course, have my colleagues from the operating committee, the CEOs of each line of business in the front row. We'll use the same procedure as normal. We'll go right to left, keep it to one question, introduce yourself, and wait for the microphone. So, we're going to go with Paul. Can you get a mic over to Paul? One of you, please.
Thank you very much. Good morning. Just a question on EE. Just wondering if you can discuss the size of the financial opportunity to upsell your content, maybe particularly sports content, to EE's 20 million subscriber base. And if you can just confirm that you've got the right to offer your existing TV content on mobile devices. Thank you.
Well, the transaction, I think, offers synergies both at a cost basis and a revenue basis. And we've set out some goals around both numbers, and we're feeling confident that we'll be able to deliver those. In many ways, I think the revenue synergies are the ones that are, I think, even more exciting than the cost ones, sorry, Sam. Because I think creating new products and services that can benefit from the combination of fixed and wireless is, I think, we're getting in right at the key part of the market. So I think it will come in the form of bundling in many cases, but it'll also, I think, allow us to create new services that are just converged across both, that customers hopefully won't see the seam between them. I think it is worth recognising that a lot of focus is around the consumer market on this, but in many ways the business market, I think, could be an area of really significant growth. So if you look at BT's brand, its coverage, its fixed product set, its IP capabilities, and you combine that with EE's strength and mobility, I think, and the lack of, the fact that neither has much of market share in business at the moment, I think that the sense of opportunity there is quite significant. On the consumer side, we do have the opportunity to provide our BT Sports services to EE customers. I think it's one of the areas that I think can be very interesting, but I think there are many others. And obviously, the closer we get to completing the transaction, the more we'll see those things firm up. So is there anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, just the size of the revenue opportunity, it's 1.6 billion of NPV. In the business space in particular, it's a real opportunity because EE is the third brand behind Voda and behind O2, and it's an opportunity with Voda Economics to make penetration in the space.
Thank you. Nick.
Good morning, it's Nick Lyle from Salt Jane. Can I ask on the consumer business, please, Gavin? How are you, you talk about how you protect customer data in the consumer business, please, and are you preparing for churn or any churn to come from other operators? How are you doing that?
Well, security is a key priority for us. You'll be surprised. It has been towards the top of our risk register for a number of years. We've got a lot of expertise in this area. So I'm sure we've told you before, but for those of you who haven't heard it, we did all the security for the Olympics in 2012, for example. And to give you a scale of the number of attacks, there were over 200 million attempts to bring down our network during the Olympics, and none got through. So we've been able to build on that that experience and provide services, security and cyber services in the business market and to governments, as well as looking at it as a way of protecting our own customers. So we take it very seriously. Situations like TalkTalk have been through in the last week are, they're not good for TalkTalk, they're not good for the market as a whole because they undermine trust. Our reaction is, the first thing we did was to offer help to TalkTalk, but then look at our own systems and just check again that we've got the best possible combination of security measures in place to protect our customers' data. So it's, we've been spending the weekend and the last few days ensuring we're as tight as we possibly can be, and we remain very vigilant in this area. Very good. Please.
Thanks. So I'll stick on consumer if I can, and two questions. One question for John, but you said that the sort of experience was above your expectations in Q2 and the VPs for Europe. Can you just give us a bit more color on what those expectations were in terms of what were you expecting in terms of churn as you went into the quarter as you started charging people? What was your expectation of opt-outs, from charging, what actually happened? How did you sort of support, the ultra offer at takeoff? And one connected question just on the Virgin sort of lightning impact. I mean, your physical line number looks pretty robust. I mean, have you seen any impact from their network expansion in the last quarter they could accelerate their own life? Thanks.
First of all, on Lightning, there's been a minimal impact to date. Clearly, we are making sure that we're anticipating where they're going as much as possible, and making sure that we are proactively working with our customers to minimise the impact there. You would expect that. But it's early doors, Steve. I think it's a few hundred thousand that they've rolled out today. But it has been a relatively small impact. Within terms of BT Sport Europe, I'll let John really give you the colour on this, but it's the headline is that in terms of what we were expecting financially, we've beaten the business plan. Now, you can always say, well, you never told us what the business plan was, but what good is that? But recognizing that we do have one, and we did have we do expect to generate a return out of this, we are ahead of where we expected to be at this point. In terms of the dynamics, they're not quite what we expected originally, but there's been less spin down than we expected. But I don't know, John, do you want to give any more specifics?
Yes, I think it's probably worth saying that the expectations were premised on confidence going into this, because the market research was quite clear that most people see this as attractive content. Just as Gavin said, that it informed the mechanic for customers to choose to get the Champions League, because customers could choose not to get it effectively. Although we were very confident and that they would want it, I think it was very important to give people a very clear choice that was extremely transparent. And the take-up has been better than we expected. I think it's important to say a couple of further points. One is that this is true not just of the consumer market, but of the pubs and clubs as well. So there was a substantial increase in unit prices of the pubs and clubs. That reflects the massive extra value for them from having three extra days in the week of their consumers to come into their pubs. And that's gone better than we thought it would as well. And then finally, just the bigger picture on this is that there are several revenue sources. So, and there's the consumer side in terms of the TV subscribers and the sports subscribers. And there's the advertising revenue from the viewing figures. The viewing figures have been good so far, actually. Not just on the TV channel, but the viewing online has been very strong too. That's third up. And so quite a few revenue sources. And finally, wholesale too. And the wholesale terms that we have obviously with Virgin Media, they represent a good deal for both parties, we believe.
The headline number in consumer is a good number, up 7% within the quarter. ARPU's up as well, 6%, so that's not shabby. And, you know, we're not ignorant to the competitive response that one or two others have been putting into the market. There's some very, very deep discounts, 12, 18 months, free fibre, for example, above the line. Free TVs, free smartphones, free tablets, these sorts of things. So it has been a very competitive quarter, but I think the investments in sport are proving good. But we've got to see the rest of the year, and I find myself through gritted teeth, supporting Chelsea, Manchester United, and Arsenal, and hoping they go through to the next round. Right.
Simon at the back, yes. Thank you. Simon Wheaton from Citi. Just gave your thoughts through the Ofcom review, and in particular the Universal Service Obligation on broadband, where you say you could envisage providing something between 5 and 10 megabits per second universally. The question really is, how much would that cost, and what would Ofcom or the government's options be to allow you to recover that cost? Is it, for example, already effectively covered by the subsidies that are already in place, or how would you envisage, the various different ways in which that might be approached?
Well, I think this is a sort of moving picture in many ways. So, in the spring, the government set out a vision for 5 megabits per second. Ofcom believe it should be 10 megabits per second. Clearly, the rollout of fibre, that is the best way of doing this. And if we deliver on the target, which I'm confident we will, we'll help the government deliver on their target, would be a better way of putting it. We'll get to 95% of the UK. If they choose to reinvest the success dividend from the first stage of BDUK We believe that could add another point of coverage, and potentially more as take-up goes beyond that. Other technologies are going to be very important as well. So we'll be relaunching the satellite service to help people, particularly in the last 1%. And there'll be, I think, a mixture of other technologies, you know, perhaps some wireless, some 4G, perhaps some long-reach VDSL that will help fill the gap between the two. But it isn't easy, and it isn't going to be cheap. There are no subsidies for broadband USO at the moment. In terms of how they may look at this, they've talked about a levy across the industry as a whole. That's not overly keen on that. That again portrays us in a way that I think would not be ideal. They can use the regulatory framework to allow for the cost to be recovered. I think there are a number of ways of looking at it. What we've said is, and we've already started this, is working both with the government and Ofcom to find a way forward on this and recognise that we're going to need to make some investment of it, but we can't cover the cost as a whole. It is too much. Very good. Pass. Next one on.
Thanks. It's Paul Marsh from Berenberg. So just two questions. I want to come back to opt-out and maybe the question of refunds. I mean, do you think customers move pretty quickly in the quarter to opt-out, or do you think that there could be still a hangover into Q3? And then just...
are you talking specifically around BT Sport here?
Yeah. And then on momentum for BT Sport, just generally, do you think it peaked towards the end of the quarter, given the timing of the season, or do you think that should still continue to build into the current quarter?
I think the bulk of the opt-out has happened if it's going to happen. We've been through one billing cycle. We've seen customers seem to appreciate the content and how we're programming the content. So, you know, I think we're over the peak there. In terms of the take-up, I see that continuing to grow through the year as a whole. If you look at traditionally what happens in Champions League, once you get into the knockout stage, and I'm very confident that we'll have representation there, civil incident, that you do get audience levels kicking up again. So we should see take-up continue to build across the year as a whole. Very good. Gary.
Jerry Gellis from Jefferies. I've got a question on global services, please. You seem very confident about the cost outlook for global services, but I wonder whether you're still committed to stabilising UK GS revenues this year. And more generally, there seems to be a trend of fairly sort of volatile quarterly performance across the different country entities within GS. Is there a structure that you can put in place to sort of improve visibility, reduce quarterly volatility in general at GS?
Do you want to tackle that?
Yeah, sure. I think it's important to put this in a number of different factors. So the levels of revenue decline in GS totally have gone down. You know, if you look at an underlying basis, last year it was 4 points, Q1, 3 points, Q2, 2 points. So that's an improving trend. In terms of the EBITDA position, we are down compared to last year. In terms of the quarter, we were down circa underlying about £10 million year on year, but half of that was due to an accounting classification of pushing lever costs up. So effectively, the levels of decline have reduced, and as Gavin said earlier, global services will grow its EBITDA in the second half of the year, and fundamentally that's an important point. In terms of visibility and volatility, I need to remember in the UK, we're in a situation we are anniversarying out on some big local government contracts. The levels of decline are reducing. It's still material, but it is reducing. But it has to be offset with the performances, particularly in terms of Spain and Italy, where they are strong, profitable performances, and overall in Europe, we are in a better position. The fact that we don't particularly split out country results and give it to you doesn't mean that we don't have visibility of country performance.
Very good. Robert.
Thank you. Robert from Deutsche Bank. I wouldn't tell any of us too much on chat people season, unfortunately. My question is on GFAST. It seems like you're getting a whole lot more out of the residual copper. So if this helps you, could the mix in CapEx going forward be more sort of equipment rather than labour? I'd be interested in your views on that. And on the GFAST spend, could you see, you talked about regulatory certainty from a BT perspective. The regulator might also be looking to get a bit more certainty about your investment as well. Could you negotiate on GFAST and the speed in which you might deploy it as part of the process to avoid a more difficult regulatory outcome in the new year?
I'm going to ask Kenny to comment on the CapEx mix in a minute. In terms of what we're getting out of GFAST, it is, if I look at what has changed in the last 12 months, there's been a dramatic increase in the capabilities and outlook from what we can get out of this technology. Absolutely right. We used to think it had to be deployed at telegraph poles, which would take a lifetime to deploy it across the UK. We're now getting the sort of performance that we want from deploying it at cabinet level. We're in test market with 8 CPs, I think. In Cambridge and in Gosforth in the northeast, we're going to be doing some more testing in Swansea, and it is performing very well. So we're pleased with that. Because we've spent a lot of time building support in the broader community behind GFAST, we're finding the vendors are really stepping up because they can see that it's going to be an important technology, not just for BT, but for other service providers as well. We're seeing the standards beginning to harden, to take it, the speeds even faster. So there's a lot that's happening, and the price point, if you like, the investment profile is getting better all the time. So, you know, even over the last 3 months, you know, the economics have become more attractive to us. In terms of what, you know, it's clearly something that the government and Ofcom are keen for us to do. It'll be something that we'll undoubtedly talk about as we get to the period of trying to come to an accommodation, I guess, which no doubt will be probably in the new year at this point. But we know something that our customers really want, and we need to get on with it. But you know, we need to recognise that these investments, and I think you guys more than anybody else will acknowledge this, is that now, we haven't reached payback on the first investment yet. We can't keep investing without seeing a return. Now, we're confident the business cases are good. We're confident that we will make a return on this. But it isn't a license to print money. No question. Tony, do you want to?
Yeah, sure. There's a couple of points. The first point is, if you look at the split of what we're going to spend our money on GFAST, ultimately it comes down to a number of items. So it'll be the equipment, which is primarily heading downwards. It will be the labour costs associated with work that we currently undertake, things like planning, and then there will be the big cost of getting to new points of presence. Now, there will be a change in the mix because we will do more of that third category of work ourselves, simply because it will reduce the unit cost, give us better control of what we need to do. If I look at the overall profile in relation to the business case, Gavin said, that's an improving position. The business case looks better now than it did 6 months ago, and with things that are moving in terms of it from a technological front, from a supplier viewpoint, I would expect the case to get better as we go ahead.
Very good. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Nick Glasshouse from Redburn. I'd like to ask John Petter a multiple choice question, if I could, which is, I'm trying to update my market model. And one of your competitors doesn't release retail numbers. And I just wondered if you thought TalkTalk has 3.4, 3.6, or 3.8 million paying retail customers. This is pretty decisive attack.
I mean, it's not right for us to comment in that sort of detail. This is as much as I would like to, but those are questions for TalkTalk, I think.
Okay. I'm sure you know, but you're not willing to share. Okay, can I have a different question then, which is just on business. I think in euros, Ireland saw a 25% increase in revenue in the quarter year on year. Was that just organic, or was there a special item in that?
It was a 14% increase in the quarter year on year.
In euros?
Yes, so it was 8% in, you know, sterling terms. And we had a number of very large one-off deals with a large customer. So you know, but underlying the performance was still strong in Ireland and still positive.
Okay, thanks very much.
Yes.
Good morning, Sunil from Bank of America. Just a question for John on the TV strategy. I mean, TV ads are clearly recording strongly up year on year. Going forward, how much should we expect in terms of investment in pushing the TV platform? Should we expect more 4K content, any more exclusive deals, including some of the Ashes? But how much do you think that's a driver of future sort of consumer strategy?
John, do you want to talk about?
Yes. These TV figures are, as you say, the best that we've ever had. 106,000 net adds, which compares versus Sky's 43, I think. And we're very pleased with that number. This was a particularly strong number. The launch of the Champions League absolutely clearly drove it. I wouldn't expect us to replicate it every single quarter in the future. So I'm not necessarily signing on to that target, Tony. In terms of the investment strategy, you'll see us to continue to be disciplined in the investments that we make, and because the focus here is in terms of sort of top and bottom line growth. If there are opportunities that come along and to give our customers better content at affordable prices, that's something that we'll absolutely do. And the investments that we've made this quarter certainly reflect that. You know, cricket investment that we've made in the next season for the Ashes is a good deal for us. We think it gets into a new sport. And the release of AMC is very disciplined, first play in on the entertainment side for some exclusive rights. So if those opportunities come up, they'll go through the normal financial discipline and that we apply, and some of them will definitely pursue.
Okay.
Thanks, James President from Nomura. Question on the business segment. You called out this acceleration of IT migration. So I just wanted to explore sort of the financial implications if that does continue to accelerate. Yeah, how much does the customer, corporate customer, generally save in this transition? Or can you make it up entirely through additional services? And are you losing voice market share in the SIP market?
Look at it already.
I mean, the economics are reasonably strong on our new propositions. What we're also seeing as well is, from the growth that we're experiencing, a third is coming from new customers, which is a positive. The overall PSTN line decline has been very steady over a number of years, around the 7-8% mark, both at market level and for BT Business. So we're not losing voice share. We will look to positively accelerate the new services because I think over the lifetime, they're pretty strong economics relative to our existing economics.
As a follow-up, can you just give us a sense of how much mobile revenue you've got from business customers now?
We don't disclose that, as you're aware. I've answered this question about four times, I think, over the last 6 quarters. The one thing I would say is that over the last six months we've actually migrated our whole customer base off our Vodafone MVNO onto the EMVNO. So we've been through that process over the last 6 months. So as part of that process, we've obviously recontracted a substantial element of our base, so it gives us a strong position to move forward from there.
Just keep it moving on there. Yeah.
Hi, it's Michael from RBC. Two quick questions. Firstly, on the $1 billion gross cost-cutting savings, I was wondering if you've got any more colour on timing, and secondly, any more colour around the potential areas of redeployment for growth. And obviously trying to get to potentially a net figure on that. And then secondly, just following up on BT Sport Europe and the Pubs and Clubs point, are you seeing just a high penetration into the existing 30k pubs and clubs, or are you actually seeing the Champions League drive the BT Sport Europe proposition into new premises?
So the cost transformation, sir? And then John on.
So in terms of the £1 billion, we've never said it's going to be over 3 years, 5 years, or 1 year. What I'd say, though, is that the rate of gross transformation savings we're making is not slowing down. So when I look at the absolute levels of savings we're going to deliver this year compared to last year, it'll be broadly similar. What distorts the numbers is the fact that we've got 2% revenue growth as opposed to a flat revenue stream. You've got a large amount more cost of sales coming through. You know, if I look at the cost transformation program generically, then we've got 60 odd live programs running at this point in time that will deliver this year, which will have an annualized impact next year, and some of these programs will also deliver incremental next year. So, you know, if you look at it in terms of that window, we know what we're doing, we know there's going to be delivery, and when it comes to this time next year, we'll have another set of programs because the opportunities are there. I didn't quite get the point about redeployment for growth.
So it's more around the division by division. So if you're saving in global services, are you redeploying in global services, or is there any cross-allocation of the costing?
No, so I mean, we have a leavers package going whereby people who are surplus to requirements who want to leave the company will go. You know, we spent $20 million on our leavers this quarter, $16 million last year. We've given the guidance that it's going to be around about $100 million for the full year. And so that's how we will remove surplus resource. But given that we're insourcing activities, that's a way of utilising the people that we have in terms of spare and utilising them productively.
So the last published number at the pubs and clubs was somewhere around 25,000, I think. I can confirm that the number's higher than that and actually grew in the quarter, first of all. There was a clear choice for the pubs in this quarter, so they could choose to take the full package. That was an increase in the unit prices of over 80%. Although for perspective, the average price for a pub on BT Sport is £394, which is about £600 cheaper than the equivalent price for Sky. Or there was an alternative for pubs to pay 7% less and not take BT Sport Europe and to get the balance of the package. The overwhelming majority of people, and it's a massive skew, have chosen to take the full package. And so this is a good business for us.
Thank you. Guy Petty from Macquarie. Quick question to Tony on his sort of CapEx comment. You suggested that this year's CapEx was like to be a little bit higher than last year. Am I right in hearing that correct?
I think you've got to take into account two things. The first is the CapEx this year includes the BDUK grant funding, and about $128 million of that number relates effectively to last year in a catch-up. So you've got to subtract that from your overall capital number. Secondly, when you look at headline number for the first half of this year, comparing it to last year, the anomaly is last year because 45% of our capital spend last year came in the first half, 55% came in the second half. So effectively what it looks like is that the material increased in spend because of those two component parts. If you run through our total spend across the year, this year it's going to be broadly even. So it's going to very much come in terms of the first half compared to second half. So effectively you get an overall position where the capital spend will come very close to your consensus. It'll be more evenly distributed.
Okay, just a quick follow-up. Given the way the FX movements have gone, to hit a number flat year on year would suggest you probably are spending more in the UK than you were. And is that because it's a good thing, you're growing your revenues better and therefore you haven't invested further behind it? And is that something we could expect more of going forward?
I wouldn't take too much into account in relation to FX fluctuations in relation to capital spend. The percentage variation on that will be very, very small. What we have got, though, is a reprofiling of our capital spend. The level of the expenditure we've got on Openreach is increasing, whereas the level in the rest of the group is falling. But you should all, again, when you look at the absolute numbers, because of the productivity improvements we're getting, we're actually buying more for that same amount of spend.
Very good. Yeah. Adam.
Thanks. It's Adam Forsoni from HSBC. In the release in the global services section, you mentioned a customer insourcing effort, and I was just wondering if that was a risk. I'd have thought that the trend would have been to contract more in global services to be.
We won't tell you who it is, the specific customer. Could you want to just talk about the overall trend you see amongst multinationals?
Yeah, I think when you look to the way we are doing in the market, I think that there are two basic trends. One is an increase in the penetration we have in customers on a wider range of services, in which you include the conferencing services, the cloud contact services, services that customers are buying more from us than before, and we consolidate with the network. The second thing is that in most of those customers, they are saying, well, you take over all the services that I have internally and you run everything for me. This is what is happening, that movement of people. That is better for us because it gives us more sustainability of the business and less volatility, as in the first question we were. And we are winning these kind of customers in different geographies, as we have shown, right? Both in the UK, we have one alliance, which is a very major deal. We have been able to secure Alstom in France, Orica in EMEA, Caixa in Brazil. So I think that this is the shape of the things we are winning, which is a broader portfolio of those customers that is securing as well the sustainability of the business.
Very good. Any more? Very good. Thank you very much. Have a good day.